When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bench with Bubba, episode 601. Going to recap week 20 Fab, talk about some news and much, much more. I guarantee you a trip down a different lane at some point in time, at least once. It will happen on this show. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and my guest, as usual, on these early week editions on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. Mike Curlin, how we doing, my friend?
Always a delight to be on the show with you.
Yes. Yeah, folks, if we were recorded about 45 minutes ago, he'd be a totally different person right now until Emerson Hancock did Emerson Hancock things. So we have a different Mike Curlin all of a sudden. So
beware. I even told you last week I wasn't really that in on him. I got a cheap share, and we'll obviously talk about it later. But I wanted him for the KC matchup, and he looked good through four, and then the fifth inning happened, and all the good that my team did tonight went to crap. Not overall, not terrible, because like it wasn't like an obliteration of the ratios, but when you have like 10 solid innings of no ERA and then get the five run runs in 0.2 innings of work, basically, it really just doesn't, you know, just again, it's one of those one step forward, three steps back. This team that was once really elite it's just injury after injury and then setback after setback with stuff. And I'm just hoping to crawl to the finish line. I don't know if the overall, I'm not going to win the overall in the main event by any means, but I was hoping to get back into the like competitive area, maybe top 20 range. I still think it's possible, but it's going to take my team getting right sooner than later. And my team is just the injuries. It's not, the pitching's been okay. It's been serviceable. It's the injuries just on the offensive side. India, Naylor, Young. And then that Mullins missed a chunk of time, and that's four core parts of your offense that between the four of them, I'm missing a rest of season for most of them. And then one guy missed about a month plus of total baseball. So it's just one of those things where it's really hard to overcome. I'm still in first place in my league. So winning my league is still a goal and achievable and obtainable one at that, but it is aggravating that something, you know, just being in the mix of the overall and potential being in like top 10, all season long for two thirds of the year, just for the fall part at the end, is really aggravating. It's a game. We love the game, and there's obstacles to overcome from it because of it. But when the injury bug hits you that hard at the end, towards the end of the year, when you're trying to make that home stretch, like that little bit of a run, it's really aggravating, because all that hard work to almost not be for nothing, but to be for like, and you just couldn't finish. You know what I mean? Like, come on.
Oh yeah. I'm having that in a few fab leagues, but more importantly, a couple 50s and DCs that I was doing very, very well in. It's getting very difficult to set lineups right now, and it's showing in my weekly standings on those leagues. So it's that time of the year. It's the dog days of the season. We have about 6 weeks to go after this week. We'll keep grinding on. We'll keep bringing you fabric caps and much, much more. You guys are slacking, though. No questions this week. Yeah, I know it's football season, but come on now. But we'll see how that goes going forward. Let's talk about a couple bits of news and notes here. There's a lot of little minute injuries here and there and everything that we can evaluate as time goes on. But it was announced on Tuesday, Shane McClanahan to have Tommy John surgery. He will miss all of 2024. And now that's like the fourth or fifth Rays pitcher to be gone with an injury. It's getting pretty, pretty wild here. Curlin, not a ton we can do about the McClanahan evaluation of this. But like Zach Lytle basically locks himself in the rotation, barring anything crazy. You might get some Jalen Beeks action or some other guys. Anything that maybe interests you out of this Tampa Bay situation?
More so, like, I think Simeone actually tweeted out, like, I think that's actually legitimately the way to handle pitchers for the Rays. Like, do we just not so ignore them, but ding them for potential for injury? Because they've done great jobs with pitching and developing them. But this goes back to, like, last year, Glasnow last year as well, Shane Baz.
And will be back next year, so that'll be a fun draft day topic.
And that's one of those things. But that's the thing, how I think he's going to be one of those, like, if you're drafting in November and December like us degenerates do, you're probably going to get really cheap Baz shares, and he's going to fly up boards come January, February. So that's just one of those names. But, like, that's what I'm like, this goes back beyond this year. It's just this year is really bad because you have McClanahan, Rasmussen, and Springs. But I feel like last year we had Baz and McClanahan, and then I feel like there's might be, and then some of the relief pitchers are always in and out, you know.
You had Rasmussen.
This year. But I'm trying to think, like, the injuries. I know, like, the relief pitchers, like, last year they had a whole bunch that came. Like, they have really good relief pitchers that just kind of fall to injury. And so it's not just the starters. I guess my point is for the Rays is that it's a pain in the neck to deal with, and it's becoming a pattern.
Yep, so it is. And it'll be interesting to see what ADPs look like. That's for one. If you have to pay a premium, probably out, get a bit of a value. We'll discuss
it. Did you know Jeffrey Springs is about to be 31?
I did not know he was that old, but that makes
sense.
Yeah, I think he was traded to them a couple years ago.
Rasmussen's 28. I kind of get that. It's why I didn't realize. Sorry, I was random. I was looking at their injured players on Roster Resource, and 30.9. He's going to be 31 soon. I did not realize Jeffrey Springs was that old. I thought he was, like, maybe, you know, 26, 27, just figured it out as a starter. No, that's weird. So, yeah, that's the thing. But that's the thing. If you look at these guys, they're all old. Rasmussen and Springs in particular are older. And these are guys that they kind of they created these guys out of nothing, essentially, right? That's how I look at it. So it's one of those things where the Rays are going to keep doing that. Now, if the price is good for players, if they can turn, like, if Littell turns into that guy this year, next year maybe he starts off as an early draft day bargain because, you know, he's coming in, he's possibly in a fifth SP spot, and you know what the Rays can do with these guys. But maybe hopefully we don't inflate the price too much based on the Rays process in terms of, like, building up pitchers and realize, like, well, they build these guys up, they're really good, but the shelf life is really short, it looks like, for these guys. So
yeah, it'll definitely be something to keep an eye on because it's really standing out. It'll definitely be a topic of conversation in the offseason. It's been something that's definitely standing out in their production. They're a team that tells their guys to, like, go very, very hard for, like, 80 pitches and then we'll go to the bullpen. Maybe that's not the answer, just throwing it out there. So we'll have to see how that one plays out. Next up here, Ozzie Albies on Monday went on the IL with a hamstring injury after a walk, of course, after their game ended on Monday. To top it off, Nicky Lopez started on Tuesday at second base. Vaughn Grissom got called up on Tuesday. Nicky Lopez has played a couple good games in his time with the Braves after he got traded from Kansas City, where he's basically lost into oblivion in that one. And then Vaughn Grissom's coming back up, where, you know, everyone's just praying for another chance of Vaughn, but we'll see how that pans out. What's your interest in a guy like Vaughn Grissom come this Sunday?
I'm not doing it. I'm just not. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'll go. I'll put in a bid, but it's one of those things where I doubt I'll be aggressive enough to get him. I guess what's nice is we get a nice long look at how the Braves are going to handle this. And you mentioned
it might be a platoon. That's the crazy
part. I remember you mentioning that. I don't know. I could see it. It depends on how, because Atlanta's already shown with Arcia that they prefer the glove. Arcia's bat came to play, so that kind of put the rest of the whole offensive defense thing. But Lopez is a glove. We know that's the thing about the Royals, that Lopez kind of stood out as a defensive plus, and then the offense was, like, good for one half a season. So we know what Lopez is. I wouldn't get too excited. I wouldn't bother with him. But if he's on a Sharkside platoon on one of the best offenses, if not the best offense in the league, you want a piece of that. Yeah, he's fine, but he's not a guy that even in that offense don't want really a piece of, to be honest. But at the end of the day, we'll have a good look at how this turns out. And if I had to guess, I think Grissom's going to get more involved, but maybe they value the defense knowing that the offense can carry Lopez's glove more than likely. And you're getting an elite up the middle defense between Lopez and Arcia. I have to go look at Lopez's numbers. I just know he's been good with the glove in the past. So I can't speak to this year in particular, but I'm assuming that his glove is still going to be playing up. And the Braves are going to want that elite defense to these guys. You have guys like Fried and Elder that can probably get, you know, rely more on ground balls, more on contact, and then maybe even more. And it kind of just gives you that little bit of cushion for your guys. And real life baseball matters more than fantasy to these teams. So, and we've seen they've not been eager to call Grissom up this whole year. Why would they suddenly, just because they have a spot for him to be a part of this team? Also, Does the AAA season, it ends soon, doesn't it?
Usually not until sometime in September.
Is it the, so, okay, so yeah, maybe I'm just maybe some other leagues.
You got a little ways to go, but Grissom, since he went back to the minors on May 7th, he's hitting .321, 30 doubles, 2 triples and 5 homers, 9 stolen bases. So he's not a lot of home run power, but extra base power. Gives him an .888 OPS since he's been there. I think more impressively, at almost a 12% walk rate and a 15% strikeout rate. So not a lot of swing and miss in that bat. I know I've seen guys like Clegg and others talk about the contact skills keep improving for Vaughn Grissom. So I think a lot of it is not even maybe the lefty-righty platoon. It comes down to what you're talking about. Do they cherish the defense up the middle? And that's one reason why they picked Orlando Arcia over Vaughn Grissom early on, is they wanted that defense up the middle. Now, do they want the double play combo when you can already plan on Acuna and Olsen and Riley and others just dropping bombs all game? You can take the discount on these other guys. Definitely something to keep an eye on. I'm with you there.
You're just watching and reacting to what the Braves do. The good thing is, again, for NFBC, and now if you're in the daily leagues, grab him just for upside, because we know, remember, he was drafted as like a top 150, 200 player when draft season.
The skills are legit. It's just a matter of it working out.
I would just think, it's just, where is the playing time going to be there consistently? I don't know. It could be a platoon. It could be a part-time role. Like, he could be more of like that utility guy who's going to play 2 to 3 games a week to rest the other guys. But this is also a team, if you notice, the Braves don't rest their players. Like, if you look at their starters, like, I don't think Acuna's missed a game this year. I don't think Harris has missed a game this year. And Harris might be the biggest winner here, because Harris is batting second tonight.
Yeah,
after with Ozzie.
And what I want to say is, we're doing all this discussion, and it could be valid. It's also, like you said, it's Tuesday. We'll have to, in daily moves, you make your moves now. But like NFBC, after Sunday, for all we know, this could be a minor deal for Albies, and he's back middle of next week, and it's, none of this matters at all.
Yeah,
like they haven't said the severity of this at all. Like, he left with a hamstring injury on Sunday. They didn't even put him on the IL until after the game on Monday. So they're still kind of reevaluating him, thinking, okay, should we rush? Like, that makes me think, could we wait like 4 days and bring him back, or should we just like sit him for 10 and then bring him back? Or it's really bad. Like, they haven't said anything to let us know the extent of the injury. So that's another factor to all of this, is we're getting all hyped up on, you know, who's the next guy. And reality, Ozzy might not be out as long as maybe needed to make it a factor type situation. So we'll see. All right. Next up here, we're not going to dig into the legalities and the potentially disgustingness of Wander Franco. What I want to ask you about is, as Levius, I probably butchered that, Basabe has been starting in place of Franco since he's been out, and he has a pretty interesting prospect in AAA this season. So far in AAA, he was hitting .296, 4 homers, 16 steals. Last year, between two levels, he had 21 steals. He's pretty much been like a 15 to 20 steal guy, a little bit of power, good contact skills, it looks like. Does someone like him interest you if you need some middle infield help? I also mentioned there's like Leover Peguero. He homered again tonight for Pittsburgh. He's been playing really well. I've actually documented him in some articles and podcasts lately. Basically, I wanted to highlight some middle infield options. So maybe you lost Albies. Maybe you lost Franco. Whatever it is, are these some of the options you might be looking to replace them?
Well, yeah. And I want to see what they end up doing with Basabe. I think he's going to play most days, but it's the Rays. I don't know how far out Tyler Walls is. Will Walls play in this? I don't even care. Walls shouldn't factor. He wasn't good.
Yeah, you're right.
But the Rays seem to always throw him back in there. I just don't know how far out he is. It was just a name that came to mind. But Peguero, you mentioned, I like him. He's very intriguing because there is swing and miss in that game. I know the strikeouts have been there. Every week he pops up and he's on my waterfalls in 15s. And he's a guy that I never land, and probably should have obviously hit a home run. I'd be very happy with that home run right now. But he's a guy that, and he's batting fifth tonight, so he's moving up the order. And sixth tonight. So, but at the end of the day, I do think he's a solid, because he has a little power, a little speed. There's some swing and miss, but you're chasing the hot streak right now and you're chasing the playing time, and he has it. The other name, Jordan Diaz, guy that in 15s I picked him up a couple days ago. He's been okay a couple weeks ago. He's been okay, like, not cool. Great, but I think it's the power upside. And and you have plate appearances, you have power upside, because if you look at his metrics, it's like 111 max EV, really strong hard hit rate numbers. It's just the ballpark doesn't help him, but middle lineups, so he has the RBI opportunities even on a bad team, and he's playing every day. So if you're looking for plate appearances, a little bit of pop, Jordan Diaz is there. And sometimes you have to look at these bad teams to get the good playing time. Those couple names that come to mind. Maybe Ezekiel Duran. I know he's floating around. I don't know if he's coming around.
Michael Massey, maybe.
I'm really bad at this because I start thinking about 15s
he's taken and 12 like thing, yeah. We'll talk about him like this past week in OCs he was added in 40 leagues, so he's probably out there in a lot of like Yahoo leagues and stuff.
See, that's why that's where I have a hard time. I struggle understanding what size league I need to really be paying attention to. You know what I mean? Like with this, so.
Well, here's a deep guy for you. Here's a deep guy to maybe monitor the rest of the week. Like when you do your lineup outlooks and stuff later this week, it might just be complete fool's gold because you look at his overall stat line, he's horrible. But Jonathan Arauz,
yeah, for the New York Mets.
He is homer for the second straight game. He's played now in like four of the last five. He's starting to play almost regularly for the Mets. And so it's like you mentioned bad teams. Like when you look at his minor league numbers this season, why are they not showing up on the let's do it the old-fashioned way here. His minor league number is 244, 14 homers and two steals. So there's a little bit of pop in that bat. That could be another dude, maybe in deeper formats. If we watch the rest of the week, he keeps playing every day. Maybe. I don't know. Just throwing it out there.
Didn't they just send him back down just to bring him back up like not so long after? And like they just sent I remember they sent him back down.
They sent Brett Beatty down, which is
I know they sent Brett Beatty down. I think but they sent him down and brought him back up. It was weird. Nah, it doesn't matter.
He's been that's the minor league numbers. He went down. He basically came back up August 2nd, then he went down for a couple days and he's back up. But that's his first time. It's his first time this year he's been up, started in August.
That's what I'm saying. He came out, he played the second, third. I think he went down for a couple days, came back up the seventh, eighth, ninth, and ever since then.
He's kind of been playing every day. He's hitting at the bottom of the order, but he's playing every day. And
it's a 15 team name. Oh, that's what I was thinking. He put him for a dollar. Monasterio, is that the name? How you say
I like
name?
Monasterio a lot for Milwaukee. He's
I just think really of Rey Mysterio every Rey time. Mysterio,
much better than his son, Dom. Yes.
Sorry. Yeah, I can't. Well, I see. I'm not the wrestling guy I once was. I do follow a little bit, but yes, Rey Mysterio is the name that comes to mind. He was my favorite wrestler as a kid. Him and I loved Goldberg, and of course, who didn't love Stone Cold, right?
Yeah, Stone Cold. He's like the legend of our era. Yeah, Monasterio's been playing good. Three homers, five steals, hitting .288.
It's more so just a solid. Yeah, he's playing every day and he hits for some average, and he's in zero.
Massive else, positional but... flexibility too. Very like he's what everyone wanted Luis Urias for Milwaukee to be. He's doing it now.
High praise. Hey, minus that. Hey,
well, and speaking of Luis Urias, I'm going to bring this up. I'm not the biggest Luis Urias fan, but he's been playing pretty much every day for Boston. That might be slowing down with Trevor Story coming back. I'll say that much. But yeah, he played on the 13th, 12th, 10th. Now he's playing close to every day, playing second base or third base. So keep an eye on that with Story coming back. That might slow down, but he's another guy potentially deep leagues. So
you said. Oh, you're saying you're because I thought it was Urias. It's Urias.
Maybe it's Urias. It's I'm Julio, hearing well, it's Julio Urias, and then
you said Luis Urias. Yes, you messed those two up.
I always say Luis Urias. Maybe it's Luis Urias. Sorry.
That's what I'm saying. You're mixing the two names because you said Urias. I'm like Marlins. God, it's like what? Okay. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We can move on from that. It's just like my head.
I just wanted to throw some middle infield options out there because it's getting dark days of summer these days, and there's going to be more injuries and more just craziness coming down the pipeline that it won't. My point would be it's not just Vaughn Grissom that's on the docket this week to keep an eye on. G-Man Choi. This is a fun one because anybody like you know yourself, myself, and others that do fab work and everything, we're like, sweet, Padres face seven righties this week. This is a chance because we talked about when the trade happened, Curlin, we love Cooper, but it's a platoon now. It's a strict platoon. Well, now Choi, you know, everyone adds him this week because of the matchups. Choi goes on the IL on Monday. Cooper goes deep on Monday. Based on the severity of Choi's injury, are you back in on Cooper now getting a regular at-bats for San Diego?
I don't know. Every time I think I figure out San Diego, they get into these weird platoons this year, and I think Cooper should get regular run. There's no reason why he shouldn't. He did get a start against a righty last night, and let's see, he's in today as well against a righty. So you got to think that it's his spot to lose. Now it's at the bottom of the lineup, even though it's a better lineup than Miami, it's still not better to be batting in the bottom two spots instead of the top two or top four he was in Miami. So I'm not back in just from a standpoint of like, obviously you want to chase play appearances and there's some upside there. 15 team corner infield spot. If you need a guy that's just going to get play and won't be a zero and has some power, sure. Cooper has value, but I don't think he's anything more than a 15-team viable type of option right now.
Yep, that's probably pretty fair. That's about all the news and notes I got. I guess there's a bunch of kind of minor injuries floating around and things to monitor. Like Bo Bichette's supposed to come back this week and he started his rehab on Tuesday night. Ryan Noda started rehab Tuesday night. Mason Miller threw 35 pitches. Tanner Houck is returning on Monday for those keeping track at home if you haven't been fab. Those are some of the minor ones. I got a ton of them. Listen to the First Pitch podcast. I talk about it every freaking morning. So you'll have a lot of stuff there. Curlin, let's talk some fab. Like I wanted to spend some time on some of these names because in other formats, some of these guys might be available, and it's pretty intriguing. We're pretty much going to skip over the top guy. He was added in 191 NFBC OC leagues, and that's Trevor Story because he wasn't drafted in most leagues, so it was the first time you could add him. That's a pretty simple add. Now what I want to ask you, your boy, Royce Lewis, was picked up in 92 leagues, as high as 41, as low as a dollar. I know you've been very excited to see him coming back. He had at least an RBI single on Tuesday night, if not more. He was hitting third. They put him right back, right in the middle of the lineup, and good old Willie Castro went for the IL with an oblique injury, so the spot is Royce's to enjoy. What are you thinking about Royce Lewis? Because I've had other people in like Yahoo formats ask, should I add Royce Lewis instead of so-and-so? So it is a question that's out there.
Well, if Royce Lewis is out there, I feel like just like before when he was a must-add, it turns right back into that he's a must-add guy. The skills are still the skills that were there before. I'm looking at his stat line tonight. He's 1-for-3 with a run in RBI. If he's going to be batting third, remember, he was batting like sixth, fifth on a good day. They started him off batting third day one. That gives me optimism that he might be in for a better lineup spot down the stretch on a team that's been playing better as well for the most part. I really like the idea of Royce Lewis, even if he bats fifth, say, because I know what's his face is out right now too. Well, there's no Buxton. There's Byron no
Buxton's out. Yep.
There's no Julian. Julian's out as well. So
what's
Lewis is.
What's he out with?
I saw him day to day. I saw he's day to day. I'm catching up. I'll be the first to admit this is the first time in a while that I'm like a day or two behind on my usual news and updates because I've just been busy. Life happened, you know. This just does. But it's one of those things where it's like I saw he was day to day and I didn't exactly click on the why yet. So I'll get to that. But at the end of the day, Royce Lewis, I don't know if batting third sticks, but I do know it's going to be there for at least a few days. But he'll be a top five bat and sixth at worst with a when the lineup's full. But I think he's more of a fifth at worst guy right now, given their current lineup. At the end of the day, though, just to reiterate, Royce Lewis is probably a must add in just about any format. I don't want to say 10 teamers, but 12s or deeper for sure.
Yeah, for sure there. All I'm seeing is Julian's just getting day off.
Oh, I saw a day to day tag on NFBC.
Yeah, maybe I'm wrong here because I didn't see any injuries unless it happened today. But I dropped him in some formats this past week. So, well, he's kind of been in a bit of a slump of late, is what we'll call it.
After that hot streak?
Yeah, after that really, really hot streak, shocker, came back down to earth. So I did some dropping of Edward Julian this past week. We'll see how that one pans out.
It says hamstring day to day.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Well, it just happens to be on the heels of a 1-for-16 slump. So yeah. Either maybe he's playing through injury or it's just an excuse to give him a few days off.
Bingo.
You never know.
Next up, Cole Reagans added in 88 leagues, as high as 81, as low as a dollar. He had the two-step last week where it got a little ugly against St. Louis, but still had the 5Ks. He's been outstanding in the month of August, though. You know, 5 total runs over about almost 18 innings and 24 strikeouts. The pitch mix change has been pretty darn good. I'm a fan of Cole Reagans because I'm a guy that likes pitchers that strike dudes out. So what's your thoughts on Cole Reagans? Because I have a fair share of him.
Yeah, I think that even in the outing, he still had like a 31% CSW, I think. So
he's still looking good.
It wasn't an awful. It was just one of those things where he wasn't going to be the pitcher he was the first few starts. You know, the league's going to adapt. He's going to have to readapt. At the end of the day, I still feel pretty strongly he's going to be a very usable piece down the stretch. The team's going to lack win potential. It's the Royals. But at the end of the day, Reagan's has shown the capabilities of being a very solid pitcher for fantasy and in general. I think maybe just don't get your hopes up in terms of him being an every week starter. View him in the lens of he's a bench streamer and you're starting him more weeks than not, probably down the stretch, as long as it's not like the Braves or a very tough matchup. Maybe look at maybe start looking into, all right, this team on paper looks good, but let's see what they've been up to the last few weeks, maybe the last month as a team. Oh, this team's been crushing righties, let me maybe sit Reagans. Like, he's not a auto start, you know. That's where I think people get so caught up in like the recent trends and someone running super hot that sometimes I honestly think he was a must start until it cooled down. Now that he's hit that one bump, maybe you give him one more chance. If he bump and he has another bad start, then you start thinking bump him back down to that, okay, he's a team streamer guy. But I still think you give him one more shot regardless of matchup, and you kind of reassess from there. Kind of, it's a start-to-start thing with him the rest of the way. There's no must-start status for Reagans, but he's close to a guy that you're starting in most situations. Again,
Just remember, league, it's league contact dependent too.
But to be fair, and to echo what you're saying for listeners out there, we're at the time of the year we're picking up guys that weren't starters to start the season for the most part for a reason. So they should all be start to start dependent pitchers. Like you're rarely, once in a while, you will rarely are going to find a pitcher on the waiver right now. We're just going to lock him in. Like Steven Matz out for the season. He became a locked in guy. That ain't going to happen. You're going to replace him with Matt Liberatore. Probably not going to lock him in every time out. Just throwing it out there. Question for you, Curlin. It was in the Gain of the Edge Discord earlier, and I'll kind of bring it up here because I'll use it to bounce off of different players we talk about. Christian Javier has been a shell of himself of late, just been an absolute disaster of late. What are you doing with a guy like Christian Javier? Because I told them in the chat in 12s and below I could see dropping him. For now, I'm kind of spot starting him, but he's not a must start for me. In 15s, you're probably holding, I'm guessing. But how are you breaking down a guy like Christian Javier?
Well, at this point, you mentioned it. He's not a must start, right? He's deserving of everything he's pretty much had in terms of, like, if you look at the underlying metrics, he's like a mid to upper fours ERA guy, and his ERA is 4.36. So technically, he's getting a little lucky even. Strikeouts haven't been there. The velo's been fine. It's not like a velocity issue. It's not like a walks issue. He's not striking out as many people. I don't know what's going on with Javier in terms of, I think it's one of those things where it might just be a lost year, and next year, You could buy low on draft day and maybe catch up there, because it's weird because he's not getting, you know, he's getting the same chases as last year, but this year part of the issue is he's not getting those swinging strikes. And I would have to dive more into the individual pitch mix. Maybe there's a change in like maybe movement of some of the pitches, and this is where my head goes of like how to figure out what happened. But we figure out what happened now is not understanding that like it doesn't just mean he's gonna fix it, you know, next month and a half or whatever. So he is, I would like to keep him as a bench streamer because in most formats, it's hard to find somebody with that type of upside on your bench. But like you mentioned, shallower 12s and 10s, he's probably droppable. I still would not try not to, but I understand doing it because he's not really someone you can start in a given day. But ultimately, I would look at the remaining schedule because I don't have it in front of me, so I'm not going to sit here and act like I do. But if I would look at his remaining schedule, look at all his starts and decide how many of those starts are you going to start him for. And if it's like, well, he has like 7 starts left. You're starting for 6 of them, like solid. He has 6 solid matchups. All right, cool. You're holding them. If he has 3 matchups and like you're not sure about the rest, maybe you say, screw it, I'm dropping him because I'm really going to hold on to this guy for 3 matchups. Now you don't drop him you don't drop Javier if there's nothing on the waiver wire. If the waiver wire is bare, like a 15 teamer, you're not dropping him because he has bad matchups. You should probably just go back to, Ben, you should probably hold him for those 3 matchups because you're not going to find anything better. You don't want Jake Irvin for like 5 of his, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sorry. But those are the names that are available. If you're lucky right now, you're getting Jake Irvin off the waiver wire. And I love Jake Irvin. I think he's very solid at times, and he's been pretty good in the second half overall. But it's one of those things where, and by pretty good, I mean 15 team standards, nothing, not good otherwise. But it's one of those things where that's the name. So you have to know your, just remember league context really matters. Format, all that. So, but at the end of the day, I think your analysis is correct in terms of shallow formats. If there's stuff on the bench, like stuff on the waiver wire, you could just stream. Why not? But I would, at the very least, look at every remaining start, expected start rest of season, get a list of those teams, see how they're performing, and just really look at it. How many of those starts are you making? How many of those starts are you starting for? And if it's like less than half, probably a drop. More than half, probably a hold.
All right. So then, have some fun with this. And I'll probably bring this up for the next handful of topics here. Would you rather have Cole Reagans or Christian Javier, not knowing their schedules, of course?
I'm probably going to go Javier, unless I'm chasing ratios, I guess, because, again, I don't trust Javier for the ratios. At least even the strikeout. I don't know. I guess if I'm chasing wins on Javier, if I'm chasing strikeouts and ratios, Reagans. Yeah. I think I want Reagans. I want Reagans for the non-wins. But if you need wins, you got to stick with Javier because you're not getting wins with Reagans.
It's true. All right, you mentioned not starting guys against good offenses. Well, this one, next guy, Emerson Hancock, was added in 87 leagues, as high as 156, as low as a dollar. He gave up 5 runs over 5 innings with 1 whole strikeout against Kansas City Royals on Tuesday night. In his debut against the Padres, 5 innings, 1 run, 3 strikeouts. A lot of pitched contact with Emerson Hancock. We saw that in the minors as well. But very popular name because he is a top, quote-unquote, top prospect. So people wanted to roster him this week. I know you got him on the cheap. You weren't overly in. I don't believe, I'll have to check. I might have got 1 share now that I think about it. Again, on the cheap. But I'm not overly excited about Hancock. It was more of a volume play for me this week. How are you looking at Emerson Hancock?
In 15, again, it goes back to your league type. In 12s, I see him as a same as, I honestly see him similarly in 12s, 15s. 15s, he just provided some upside compared to what was available, and a guy that was definitely worth streaming this week. I know the Houston matchup was scary. The KC one looked good for 4 out of 5 innings, so it wasn't like he was cruising for a little bit there. The one strikeout wasn't good, but like right now he's still en route to get a win. So if you were chasing wins, if you're chasing ratios, the ratios were good.
That's why Kirlin's perked up. He's about to get his win all of a sudden.
I'm not really happy because I really need the ratio. I actually need the ratios more than I need the wins right now. But my team's actually been, after I was complaining about not getting any wins, I started getting wins. My ratios went it was weird. My ratios went in the tank, but I started getting more wins. It doesn't matter. It's fantasy baseball is wonderful, isn't it? It makes so much sense. All this work and effort, and just nothing goes as you plan. Anyway, but yeah, so Hancock's one of those guys where in 15s, he was definitely one of the best things available on the waiver wire because Reagan's was gone and all the other guys are gone. But in 12s, he's still that guy. Like, he's not a must keep guy. You get him for this week, see how he does against these two guys, and if he sucks against Houston now, then you go ahead and just, I honestly wouldn't have a problem moving him on. I would view him more as a streamer in 12s. In 15s, like, I have, like, as a guy with who has him in a 15 teamer, even if he struggles against Houston, I'm more so likely to plant him on my bench just to see where it goes, because you don't want to overreact to early starts from a rookie. Because for every, I mean, I know Wu is a really tough example to repeat, but same team, same idea, lesser of a prospect from my understanding too, was Wu had that, you know, had that bad outing.
Well, Wu was drafted last year. He came up real quick.
But Wu was also came up. What I'm getting at with Wu is he came up and he struggled his first outing. Was really cheap and then dominated and looked really good and people looked really foolish, and that's kind of what I had thought of with Emerson Hancock, because I know Hancock was he's one of their top better prospects. I'm not sure if he was ranked better than Wu. I thought he was, but at the end of the day, even if he wasn't, I think it's a very similar prospect ranking between the two, and I don't want to just give up on that based on a couple tough starts to begin the year. If I can, like I said, in 12s, I'm more likely to move on, but in 15s, I would hold and try to make them away and just see where it goes and give them another chance next week. And because you have to have a bit of a quick, you know, trigger finger right now. I get that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I still think I'm willing to, again, on my bench. I'm willing, if I can afford the bench spot, I would like to keep them on my bench for one more week. Unless he absolutely gets obliterated by Houston, maybe you think twice, but it's Houston. I'm expecting Houston to completely decimate them, and I'm going to cry the whole night away while it's happening.
Yeah, I'm looking at his Savant page from tonight. 76 pitches, 6 total whiffs, and a 21% CSW. That's not leaving
me
warm.
What's the zone percent?
Zone percent overall, 57%. 72% with his fastball, slider 39, sinker 61, changeup 25. So he's trying to paint, is what it sounds like.
I'm wondering if he needs to maybe drop a pitch up
the, well, a lot of the similarities to Hancock, and if it kind of makes a little bit of sense if he had a little more of a strikeout upside, which he still might. Like, he had a 26% K rate in the minors, so he had strikeouts, but people compared him more to George Kirby than Logan Gilbert, if that makes sense, where Kirby's more of a pitcher that kind of eats up innings, decent ratios, and every now and then has a big strikeout game, where Gilbert's more like, I'm gonna try to power it by you and I might get blown up in the process. And I kind of see that with Hancock. Honestly, that could be something there. So maybe, yeah, you could be right about the Wu thing. A couple bad, you know, get your feet wet starts, and then we find something. We'll see. But yeah, it's tough to see.
I just looked at his pitch plot, and man, I guess I could share my screen. Why not? Right? It's a show. People could you and Bloom do this all the time. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. If you're not listening via podcast, it is on the YouTube, so you can come check stuff out.
I'm gonna if I can learn how to do this. Here, share screen. Sorry, yeah. It's on the fly. I wasn't exactly planning this one.
But this is the fun stuff. We have with no questions really. We have time to break things down and have some fun here. So here's what Kirlin's looking at.
So the pitch plot, I just picked it up for Emerson Hancock. And if you just look, I feel like there's a lot. He just way too much. It wasn't around the edges enough. Look at the inside of the zone. It's just, and those are all in the red dots for those looking. Those are all four seamers. The orange are the sinkers, and he's just pounding middle. That's probably why he got crushed tonight. He can't. When you're throwing 90, 91, I think that's what he was throwing, was like 90, 91 tonight. Yep. And you can't throw them down the middle. And yeah, he's maxing 94, but averaging 91, 92. The sinker, same, actually a lower min, but around the same average velocity. So at the end of the day, if you're sitting about 91, 92, I don't care who you are, you have to hit your spots.
You're not going
to
fool a big league hitter at all.
Like, you have to hit your spots.
Have a chance. Yeah.
That's what I was getting at. That's why I was like, I wanted to see, okay, because he's more of a pitcher, right? Because he throws the four pitches, and he has to be more of a pitcher. well, if you're more of a pitcher, you can't miss your spots and sit middle, or even or middle up or middle anywhere. You have to hit the outside of the zones, live on the edges, live in the dirt, whatever you have to do. You don't put the ball in the zone that much or make it so hittable. You got to be better at hitting your spots, and Hancock was not tonight. And that could be an issue. Maybe he's a guy that struggles at the end of the year, and he's a cheap draft guy next year. So it's one of those guys, like, don't give up on these guys. That's another thing. Like, these rookies,
no, not at all.
But I think people just, like, they're going to be afterthoughts, and then come February, everyone's going to be talking them up, and it's like, do you not remember we talked about this in September or August even? We're talking about this in August because we know how it's going to turn out. We're going to sit there and be like, yeah, just don't forget all these guys in next year, and then people are going to forget about them. We're going to be talking about them in November, December, and then every major news outlet will be talking about them in January, February, and people don't realize that we've been, you know how it works.
Yep. What, anyway. One word answer, the person's last name. Would you rather have Hancock or Javier?
Javier.
Okay. Next up on this one, this might be a little funner when we get to the Javier question at the end. Chase Silseth added an 86
Silseth
leagues.
Silseth over Javier.
Yeah, that's easy, this one. We finally got one here. Silseth added an 86 leagues, as high as 81, as low as a dollar. He has been out. He's forced the hand of the Angels, to be honest. He has 19, 29, 41 Ks in his last four starts. He's allowed four total earned runs over those four starts, which has been about 23 innings of work. He's been ridiculous, Curlin. So what's your thoughts on Silseth? Because I obviously wish I had him a couple weeks ago, but I tried to grab him everywhere I could this week.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Your mic's off, kid.
Oh my God, what a rookie mistake. I wish I wasn't I was out on him because I didn't trust the skills. I didn't trust the Angels.
I didn't trust the rotation spot with the Angels. That's what killed me.
I should have trusted.
I literally tweeted it out. I said, what's it going to take for the Angels to get rid of either Anderson or Detmers to put him in this rotation?
And that's what aggravated me. So I didn't trust the Angels to do the right thing, and I should have bet on the skills. I remember he's looked fantastic. There's no two ways about it. He's been really rock solid. He's pitching. He's throwing the secondaries more. He's just been so filthy. And there's no reason not to buy into what he's showing us. And although, teams will adapt, he is giving up a lot of hard, again, before last start anyway, he's been giving up plenty of barrels, plenty of hard hits. So it's one of those things where when players are making contact, they're hitting the ball hard and they're squaring it up. It's just they're not making a lot of contact. He's sporting an elite K-minus walk rate over the last four starts at this point now. ERA south of two. It's been stupid. More splitters and sliders, less sinkers. That was kind of the big change we saw in the last four starts. Ultimately, still, Seth, there's a lot to like here, a lot to believe in, and a guy that's going to be on, he's going to be next year's Tristan McKenzie, basically, at this point. I think that's the comp, not from skill set, but in terms of like guy who everyone's going to be high on, who's going to go like top 20, and there's going to be, it's going to be based off of a small sample, blah, blah, blah. But I think that's the kind of thing going towards that track. You know what I mean?
That makes sense. Yeah, Cannon came back from the IL. He threw out of the bullpen on Monday. Detmers is pitching on Wednesday while Ohtani takes a turn in the rotation off. And then there's rumors that Detmers is the one that's going to be out of luck here pretty soon. So we'll see how that plays out. Basically, Detmers is pitching for his job on Wednesday. Let's put it that way. So we'll see how that plays out. But when the Angels said that, it basically said they trust Silseth a lot, which made me very happy as a fantasy manager out there. All right, next up is another good fun one. Ke'Bryan Hayes added in 85 leagues, as high as 63, as low as a dollar. He's been battling back issues all year, so that's been scary even now. But coming into tonight, he came back on August 2nd, hitting 286, six extra base hits, three of them being home runs, striking out less than 18% of the time, went 2-for-6 on Tuesday night. The power, like the three home runs, actually is kind of a surprise, but overall the power is not what you want from a guy like Ke'Bryan Hayes. But he's hitting for average, putting together some really good, you know, plate appearances, Curlin. So what's your thoughts on him going forward? Now, they are back injuries, so that could pop up at any moment and ruin all of this. But right now he's been very, very productive, and he's out there on a lot of waiver wires, at least in different formats.
I'm not going to lie to you and act like I know which name we're talking about
here. Ke'Bryan Hayes.
Ke'Bryan Hayes. Oh, my God. It slipped my mind. For some reason, I went to Mankata. If you said back injury, my brain went to Mankata.
Yeah, no, he's not worth talking about.
Well, hey, he's been good lately. Don't you sleep on the last 7 days.
Okay, you go at him, and then don't text me. Don't text me when you're complaining he's 0 for 12 for the week.
Oh, that's going to happen. That's why. But Hayes, I just remember Hayes. The whole thing about Hayes was like, oh, look, he put on some weight. Oh, look, with the idea of putting power, trying to do power, blah, blah, blah. And then now he's kind of showing it-ish, but he's just, I don't trust the health. Team context doesn't do him any favors either, but it's aggravating. I'm tired. I'm sorry, but I feel really crappy about like the, hey, well, who was that? This is like the second time I've done that on your show, maybe third. I do it too often. Either way, I'm supposed to be professional. I don't get paid enough to do this. I don't get paid at all to do this. 891 OPS over the last 14 days, 310 ice. So Hayes has been stupid hot right now. You ride it and you hope that, because this is what he was supposed to be. Like, people that were drafting him were expecting Hayes to take the step because he entered spring. He was one of those, oh, best shape my life, spring training, put on 10 pounds of muscle, was elevating the ball more in spring and just couldn't stay healthy, which is typical Ke'Bryan Hayes. Top prospect pedigree. So the guy has the skills to do it. The playing time is there. You ride it, but I don't know how much you can buy into it just because I'm not saying this, he can't be this guy. I just don't know if I can trust him to stay healthy. Out of his 12 hits in the last 14 days, which is over 11 games, six of them have been extra base hits. That's impressive.
He's playing really well.
Very well.
I wrote him up over the weekend, talked about him on a couple shows this week, and I was pleasantly surprised of how well he's been doing. But like you said, I'm just worried. You ride it out for now, because there's probably not many better options out there at third base, maybe even corner infield right now. But just be prepared. As someone that struggles with back injuries, this could be something that pops up yet again with Ke'Bryan Hayes. Let's go back to the mound here. Zach Lytle picked up in 70 leagues, as high as $28, as low as a buck. He has entered the Rays rotation with their slew of injuries. We kind of mentioned him earlier in the show. He started in four of his last five outings. So since the All-Star break, Mr. Lytle has made four appearances. He's pitching on Tuesday as we speak, three shutout innings with a K so far. But in the five outings, four starts before tonight, 2.42 ERA, 17 Ks and 22 innings. What's your thoughts on Lytle? Because they've got him to go five innings or more in three straight, six innings and back-to-back starts. That's Zach Lytle we're talking about.
Yeah, no, I heard Lytle. I just don't know what to expect, because I guess one of the things, it goes back to the Rays. Like, you trust the Rays with these guys. I heard Zach Lytle, by the way. That was funny because you thought it was my intention. And that's fair. And that's fair because I did lose the other name on the last one. But Lytle is just a guy that I don't know what to think anymore, because I like, obviously it's the Rays. I trust them. I really do trust them with pitchers. But at the end of the day, I think you just ride it. You have to ride it out with the Rays, obviously, but I don't know. Like, I want to buy in because the Rays do know how to make nothing out of something, or something out of nothing. They know how to make something out of nothing, because nothing out of something. So nothing out of something is the opposite of what. Yep. So like what you're seeing here, I'm more likely to buy. Sure, he's been lucky. Like over the last three starts, 2.65 ERA, but then you're looking at the 4.36 Sierra. So you're seeing that he's lucky. that's pretty much really all it is. Like, he's getting rather lucky right now. The ground ball rate, 46.5%, really solid. A decent chase rate, 32.8%, is good, not great. I think league average is like roughly 33% or 31%. He's either right at or just above or below league average, so it's not bad. But the swing strike rate's only 8.7%. That's about 3-5% below league average. And you want that to be higher in order for the strikeouts to be there, which are not going to be there right now. He's given up two Lytle's given up a decent amount of hard contact right now, but because of ground ball rate, it's going to help keep it down. I don't know. I think he's running a little pure for my liking. I think the strikeouts aren't there. That kind of concerns me. You ride with it, but don't expect it to be sustainable. And I mean, Houston was a good story. You know, he gave up 8 hits and only 2 earned runs in that outing. But like, since then, it's been Detroit and St. Louis. So like, a couple decent matchups, and St. Louis still got to him a little bit. 7 hits, 3 earned runs. So you're seeing in 2 of those starts, he's given up at least 7 hits. And I don't know, man. I'm not too optimistic long term, but doesn't matter what you think long-term with a guy like that. You're riding the wave. And right now, it's all about riding waves. You get your production and you get out.
Pitch and ditch, as they say. Pitch and ditch. This could be a quick one here. Jonah Heim picked up in 56 leagues, as high as 117. Came back way ahead of schedule from this wrist injury. Sucks because I dropped him because of the initial results. He was my most rostered player in the NPC after drafts. I did not get him back anywhere because I've been playing the roulette game at catcher and been happy with the production I've having. The two things I'll say, and I discussed this in our Discord as well, with the injury with Heim, they rushed him back very quick, and it was a wrist injury that they were worried about tendon issues. So that concerns me as overall power production possibly coming back right away. Secondly, Mitch Garver's playing very, very well. And it feels like this could turn into one of those Atlanta Braves situations with Sean Murphy and Travis d'Arnaud, with Jonah Heim and Mitch Garver. I could just be speaking completely out of my rear end. But if you had the option to pick up Jonah Heim this week, how are you approaching that? Because I saw some very smart people that spent some pretty good capital this time of year to bring Jonah Heim to their rosters.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't know if Heim can. I'm afraid of the health or lack thereof. I'm afraid that like this, they're talking about like he possibly needed surgery. Yep. That would have been season ending. So I dropped him in a league too. And although I really like what he's done this year, I do believe that he could be, even like if he takes off-season surgery and is right by spring training, I would still rank him aggressively.
Well, I'd be way in on him next year for sure.
As long as he's healthy entering the year, I think what we saw this year, a lot of it's pretty legitimate. He showed these skills last year, and the shift ate him up a bit, and now no shift, and we're seeing just kind of the best of both worlds as a switch hitting a catcher, which is rare in its own right. But I'm concerned. I wouldn't be overly aggressive. I don't know if I trust the power to be there. He was 1-for-4 today. I don't know, but I don't know what to expect, man. I have a hard time believing that he's gonna be productive down the stretch. I think you have to add him in 2 catcher leagues for sure. Like, or he should even be added in 1 catcher leagues. He should be a guy that you probably want to have and see where it goes. But I don't think I'm gonna be overly aggressive to go after him with my bid bucks. That if he is available in a league, just because I just the wrists are scary. How many times have we seen wrists have setbacks? How many times have we seen
and it just zaps the power. Maybe he hits for like 250 average. The power is what concerns me the most. Like, what's he going to pull off there?
And without the power, what is he?
Exactly.
He's still usable in 2 catcher leagues, but he's not the Jonah Heim that he's been. That's my concern, that he won't be Jonah Heim of what you drafted him to be.
100% with you on that one. Let's talk Kerry Carpenter. We talked about him before in the show. Okay. Streaming options. I know you've been on him a few times. He has picked up in 49 leagues, as high as $34, as low as a dollar. Over the last 10 games, heading into Tuesday, hitting .459 with 3 doubles, 4 home runs, 10 runs scored, and 6 RBIs. And what impressed me the most when I looked into him the other day, only struck out 10% of the time over that stretch. Like, his plate skills are very good, 15% barrel rate. We've talked about his power on the season before. Like, on the season, he's got 15 homers and a .282 average, no speed. So he's been productive when healthy, but people were pretty aggressive on him this week, probably for the matchups the Tigers had this week. But what's your thoughts on Kerry Carpenter? Because he's almost feeling like in 15s, he's almost just an everyday roster, maybe not a starter, but at least on the bench. Where 12s, you can probably stream him in and out and whatnot.
I'm looking at him as like he's plugged into my 15s for sure. His 5 outfielder leagues, 15s. He's been a guy that like I wish I held on to him earlier in the year when I got him. I was chasing power. Got him, got a few home runs, and he got injured. So, of course, I dropped him. Like him and Jake Berger, guys, I wish I never let go because
I was too busy. I was turning and burning. Those guys were streamers at the time. Carpenter's an everyday guy now, batting in the middle of the order, even against lefties. He's faced 4 of the last 5 they faced, 6 of the 7 overall they faced in the last 30 days. So Carpenter isn't even platooning every day anymore like he used to be. So the playing time is there. He's batting in the middle of the order. So position is there. He's batting 4th last 2 games against righties, 6th the last game against a lefty. So he's batting 4th or 6th right now, respectively. So Carpenter has playing time. He has the lineup spot. And if you look at the skills, a lot to like. He's earning his skills. You have above average hard hit rates. You have decent WOBA and XWOBA. If you look at the X stats, I'm not a big X stats guy, but they actually line up. They suggest he's a little lucky. I don't care about X stats, so they can kick rocks. But like he's crushing fastballs and he's crushing off speed compared to last year where he couldn't touch off speed pitches. He still struggles in his breaking balls, so I could see breaking balls get thrown at him more often, maybe moving forward as pitchers adapt. But he's absolutely crushing fastballs to a point where it's like he's kind of overperforming, but he's actually hitting off speed rather well this year and seems to be working for Carpenter. So if you look at that paired with the overall skill growth, you're seeing a cut down in swing strike rate for Carpenter, better than league average now. You're seeing a career best of zone contact rate nearing 90%, which is 90% like that elite range. He's at 88.9, and league average for reference is 85.5. So Carpenter's a guy who's making those strides. So the strikeout gains are overall in the year are there too. 21.7%, by far a career best at the major league level. A guy who only showed something like that in 2022 in Triple A, and we were talking a 35 game sample. Otherwise, he's always been he kind of showed issues with strikeouts before that, and even up till this point at the higher levels. So Carpenter could have just finally be getting into his own, because before all this, back in Double A, his first taste, 20% strikeout rate in 2019 in A ball, 16%. Oh, this is a very small sample. We get my point. He wasn't always a strikeout guy. The strikeouts kind of hit him, and then it seems like he's taking a step forward, and this is closer to the guy he is now. Do I think he's a 280 hitter? Probably not. 260-265 is something I could honestly expect more so going forward, but he's also a guy that's showing gains. Carpenter's a guy that's showing gains in approach while also being above average in terms of like the power production and potential, while also losing the shift being against him as a lefty. So he's got a lot going for him. He's also entering that prime age. He's 25. Carpenter, I'm buying a lot more than I'm not buying. Like, I think that there's a lot more legitimacy to this than anything. I think he's very much a start in 15s and even 12s right now. Just plug him in, especially if you need power. He's an everyday player with power. And I know I just gave a really in-depth breakdown on Carpenter right now.
I knew when he was on the list, I'm like, Kirtland's going to like this. Will get Kirtland's spirits up. So like, it's a good one for him.
I love Carpenter.
I know your thoughts on him. And it's true. Like, he's very good. He's underappreciated. Like I said, any player that's hitting 282 on the year with like 15, 16 homers, pretty darn good ball player.
That sounds like Garrett Cooper. There. Sounds like Garrett Cooper. But the thing is but Carpenter. Better. But Carpenter did that in 75 games. That's Garrett Cooper's season. True. This is a guy that has legitimate 30 home run power even in that ballpark. That's the thing. And he's pretty much everything you hoped Spencer Torkelson would be.
He's doing everything everyone wanted Mike Yastrzemski to be. This is what he's doing right now.
Because like when you drafted Torque, that's why I use his teammate, a guy with that type of power and upside. This is what you drafted Torque to be, and he's kind of like he's doing what you wanted. He's giving you that 4 category production that I didn't see the batting average being there, but I always knew he was a potential for like 25 plus in that park easy, and he's pacing out to be well above that. That's why I was like, he's closer to a 30 home run guy right now. If he was healthy, but at the end of the day, that power is legitimate. It's a matter of, it's all about approach. And same with Torque. Torque has power. It's the approach.
He's very streaky. Torque is the burger of the Tigers.
It very sucks because I want to see these guys on good, like in good ballparks.
Good ballparks that can be scary good. That's what can be fun. Let's talk Matthew Liberatore. This is an interesting one. 47 leagues, as high as $21, as low as a buck. 8 shutout with 7 Ks against the Rays. The Rays are scuffling in a big way. Prior to that, though, Liberatore's been a disaster. Bullpen, minor leagues, anywhere you put him, it's been rough. I didn't even attempt a bid on him this week because I don't buy it. Maybe he proves me wrong. Maybe it's one of those like, hey, he's gone back and forth. He's learning. He figured something out finally because he is that prospect. But I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I don't know about you.
So this is his
first. The A's on Wednesday, which helps.
That was actually I had him on a waterfall. He was my actual. I probably should have went after him instead of Hancock, but he was my Hancock. He was my runner up, my second in that waterfall. And the reason why I was even halfway in was because we saw the velo jump back up. This was the highest velo since back in like June, and like one of the higher ones of the year. So the big thing was the velo jump was there for Liberatore. And with it, there was a little bit of a pitch mix change, less fast, like probably the, I think it was the lowest amount of fastballs he's thrown in a start for seamers, while increasing the usage of, like, he had more changeups, more just secondaries. The sinker was up a little bit, was up from being down. It's weird. His sinker's been all over the place this year, but he's been kind of incorporating more secondaries, dropped the four seam usage, but paired with the velo gains, I was intrigued. I wasn't like all in, but I was thinking to myself, like you kind of said, maybe he figured out, maybe Liberatore went down there or figured it out, got his mechanics back. Found the velocity, changed it, tweaked his pitch mix up a little bit, throwing the changeup more than ever this year, too. That was the thing. Was, okay, so the changeup was the one he added the most of, because I know the sinker's kind of fun. Anyway, I'm looking at it right now, just on the fly as well, because I remember looking at it earlier this week. Anyway, at the end of the day, though, very intriguing, very interesting. A guy that I would definitely say is worth looking into if the velo's back and maybe found something with that changeup or something, but it's still too early to say that there's more to it than just a good start. I'm just encouraged by the velo being up and the change in pitch mix in this outing, but it's a single start outcome. Every start's going to change a player's pitch mix usually because they go into a start with a certain plan of attack
team they're facing. Yeah.
So we'll see if more lefties, more righties, et cetera, because that could alter things. But at the end of the day, I guess the velo being back is a big step forward for Liberatore, and the fact that he's incorporating a changeup more, maybe that's could be like just having the other secondaries incorporated more as a whole. Could be a step forward as he takes away that use of that four-seamer that probably, if I had to guess, I bet you that four-seamer was getting crushed up until that point too.
That would make sense. Last guy I wanted to bring up here before we talk about our ad drops of the week, the Moose. Mike Moustakis added in 43 leagues, as high as $17, as low as a buck. I've written him up, I think, in three straight waiver wire columns, talked about him way too much in DFS and other shows. He's been pretty good since he came to the Angels in June. Rendon went down, so he's the everyday third baseman, plays occasionally at first base for the Angels, hits fourth pretty much every day for the Angels. Since the All-Star break, Moose is hitting .276 with seven doubles, five homers, 14 runs, and 20 RBIs. It's basically a month's work of work he's put those numbers up there, striking out less than 20%. I don't think he'll ever be the guy he once was in Kansas City. These are some pretty darn good numbers if you need a corner infield option, and I've been starting on the last few weeks in 12s.
I don't know what to think. I mean, the hard hit rate numbers are the best since 2016. Barrel rate is the highest it's been since 2020. You look at this for Moustakis, he's elevating the ball as well as ever. He's putting the ball in the air 43.2% of the time, pulling the ball plenty. I wonder about that pull fly ball rate. It's probably up there. It probably explains why he's getting the power production, honestly. But it's just weird to me. Like, I don't know. It doesn't matter if it makes sense. You just, again, it goes back to ride it out because I don't know if I buy it, but there are some stuff here that's like very like legitimately intriguing. So at least it's not completely crazy. The pull fly ball rate is 34.5%. 32.5%. So when you combine his pull fly balls and pull line drives, we're looking at 50% of his balls are pulled in the air. That's going to turn into good things. So the approach is there for Moustakis to at least produce the power while he's making contact. The big thing is that he's making contact compared to, like, I feel like that's been his biggest issue. He just hasn't been healthy or hasn't been able to do it.
That's why I highlighted striking out less than 20%. That's big for Moose.
Well, so the thing is his contact rates aren't even up, but what it is he's not chasing. It's like he's being patient and not missing as much in the zone. The swing strike rate is down, still high. 13.2% isn't low. I would chalk this up to a hot streak, obviously. I think no one's really surprised by that finding. Oh, it's a hot streak for Moose? No, you don't say.
It's been a long hot streak, but though.
It's just it's one of those things where, I mean, we've seen guys run hot. Well, we saw how long was Rooker's hot streak.
Yeah, true.
So this is like, I feel like this is a Brent Rooker situation where it's like, there's some things there that suggest, like the power, I believe the power because the approach is there in terms of from Moustakis, the pull, fly ball, line drive approach is there. So I believe the power is legitimately like a thing. I just don't know how much I buy into the, because the contact rates aren't really gained. And yes, he is chasing less, so that's good. And the swing strike rate is lower, but it's still worse than league average. The contact rates are still below league average. So I think this is a Brent Rooker situation where it's just an elongated heater. And you ride it out, but I just don't know. And honestly, it doesn't matter if I'm wrong or right. It doesn't matter if I'm right, because at this point of the year, enjoy it. Like, just ride. Yep. I just can't stress that enough because I want to make sure people understand.
I'm gonna cut that clip out. Curlin just said enjoy it when it comes to fantasy baseball. And trust me, if you talk to Curlin off the air, he's not enjoying anything right now.
I hate fantasy baseball.
So we're gonna clip that one. Let's talk about our ad drops of the week, Curlin, because I know you have Emerson Hancock as one of them. So who are your other ad drops of the week?
Okay, so for this week, I dropped India. I don't remember who I dropped him for. It doesn't matter because he's gone now. So rest in peace, India. You can go join Josh Naylor and Josh Young and every other disappointment of an injury the second half for me. I grabbed, who else did I grab? I grabbed Cade Marlowe because he sat against a righty, of course, but he had 6 out of 7 against righties, and he'd been hot lately, so I was really interested in Cade Marlowe, power, speed. I grabbed Monasterio in my league because I'm chasing some batting average help, and I think I know it's tough matchups this week, so it might not have been the week to go after him, but Monasterio is a guy that I trust the playing time. I'm kind of just chasing plate appearances, and I'm chasing batting average a little bit, so him, Brian Rocchio, who, again, Rocchio didn't start after sitting Sunday, I don't see any injury news on him, so that threw me off because Rocchio was coming off a really strong week, and I figured as a rookie coming off a strong week, maybe it took him time, he figured it out, so he'd be good again. You know, he'd hit on that prospect pedigree a bit, but who knows? He's just sitting back to my games. Maybe there's a weird injury that we don't know about. But also Drew Waters, he's somehow still available in my league. I feel like I've seen him added and dropped so many times. He was kind of hot before the paternity or the bereavement list, so I got him. So I got Drew Waters, Rocchio, Monasterio, and Marlowe were my 4 offense. I'm just turning and burning offensive pieces, obviously. And then Emerson Hancock. So those were my 5 main. Those were my 5 additions. We talked about pretty much all of them one way or another. Cade Marlowe, I bid. That's the only one I actually bid. All those bids were like 6-5, 3-2, really good. Marlowe was 5-0. And I think it's because I found him as like a really fun name. I think there's some bias that went into that because I was really in on him earlier.
He's hitting in the middle of the order. He's playing pretty well.
He was playing very well, but the problem is he sat against righty tonight for some reason, but and then there's a lefty either tomorrow or the next day. But it's one of those things where he got added by somebody else in my league for more, for like double digits, like for like 10-15 bucks earlier a couple weeks ago, was dropped. So I saw him get hot again, so I was like, well, screw it, I'm gonna go ahead and put $5 on him because I figured he'd at least get $2 or $3 bid on him. 0. So that one hurt. It was a 5-0. So, and right now, you know, I'm down to like no money. So that was that one hurt. But at the end of the day, I still believe the skill set. I looked at him like, sure, he's a streamer, but I really do think he can. I think Marlowe can have some staying power, even if he's a bench streamer, just variety matchups, just because of the skill set he's been showing. And we know he actually has a little power speed. So at the end of the day, so he was the upside play. But the other ones all were just like, hey, let me attack playing time / like I want to build some batting average help. And of course, I have Kyle Lewis, who came back tonight, and I didn't get him in my lineup because he only has a 2-game week, and I probably should have got him in anyway. But he had a 2-game week, so I get him back, and Chapman's out tonight, so I didn't plug him in. So I got some issues with – oh, Chapman would be – by the way, Chapman would be another injury to that offense if Chapman –
yeah, that finger issue. Yeah.
Yeah, so –
you're giving your team the finger, huh?
If you've seen my team that I drafted, and not because I was a bad draft, just the injuries. My team right now is full of free agencies. Michael Massey, Jordan Diaz, McCormick, who I've held on to since I got him. So it's been a good one. Waters, Rocchio, Monasterio, Marlowe. My team is waiver. Nolan Jones. My whole team is a waiver wire. Henry Davis. And I understand. Don't get me wrong. I understand Fab is a huge part of a free agency. Is a huge part of fantasy. I get that. But my team, a true winning team, shouldn't be composed of like 90%. But it wasn't. My pitching staff is still like 90% of what I drafted. Well, and yet my pitching's, but that's the thing. My hitting was doing really well, and I lost so many key parts. So I'm just frustrated. It's not supposed to happen to me, blah, blah. I'm supposed to run pure all year, my first ever main event. I'm not supposed to feel defeat or heartbreak. Come on, man.
We'll see what happens. Here are my ad drops for my OCs this week. I added Zach Lytle, dropped Brian Wu, big Wu fan, but not sure what to expect there. Added Mike Tauchman, dropped Edward Julien. That was one. They're both 4-0 bids. OC2, I added Brandon Belt, dropped Edward Julien. Belt's been playing really well, got a lot of righties this week. With Toronto, added Bryce Terang, dropped Tim Anderson. Added Weston Wilson, dropped Brian Wu for a buck. That was like a waterfall, and somehow I ended up with Weston Wilson. That might be a drop again, but I like the matchup and the lefties they got coming up that they're facing. And then in OC1, I made a bunch of moves. Added Miles Mikolas, dropped Nestor Cortez. Added Brandon Belt, dropped Edward Julien. Added Brian Hayes, dropped Tim Anderson. Added Kyle Gibson, dropped Jose Quintana. So we were active in that one as well. So, yeah, just a lot of just churning and burning, similar to you. Nothing staple, but like Belt's been hit with a ton of power, decent average of late. Brian Hayes, Mikolas has been really good. I was happy to see him out there. Kyle Gibson has been sneaky good for those not keeping track at home, like sneaky ratio good of late. So he's been a guy as well. But for the most part, I gave up on Julien. That's the one I was a tough cut. That was a 12 team. Like, hey, we're making it or breaking it, kid. So it's time to cut some bait and see where things go. We got two questions that came in during the show, Curlin. So we're going to fire these off real quick.
I saw one of them. I have no answer for one of them.
Yeah, Andy Splinter said, whose schedule do y'all like rest of the season, hitting and pitching? I would need more time than that. Sorry, I don't have the schedule in front of me to pull that one off.
I actually put it out for free too. I have like all the teams' remaining schedules, and I used it mostly for hitters just because like, hey, there's like 6-start week, 5-start week. But I guess you could look at that and see which pitchers you want first. So if you want it, I could tweet back out. Let me know.
The pitching changes so much these days. Like each week, yeah. In the middle of the week, even after you added them, like it's
maybe you can look at like the last 5 weeks and be like, all right, cool. Atlanta has Atlanta has like, okay, like 3 7-game weeks. So I'm looking right now. They have 3 7-game weeks on the stretch. Maybe you can get a couple 2-start weeks out of this guy, and they get Colorado, Philly, and Washington. Like you can get an idea of a guy. Like you can just look at their schedule and get an idea. Like, okay, maybe look at these matchups. Like, that's how I would do it. I like to try to actually pinpoint how they exactly line up rest of the season, but I guess that would be the way to look. Because I have access to do it. I can't, but like you said, 25 minutes ago or wherever it was, like in the middle of the podcast, I can't just randomly pull those teams and all that out of thin air without one more time. Sorry, buddy.
And the Dave Petrosiello says, in John Gray's last 3 starts, even though the results weren't there in the first two, the swinging strike is way up. Is it possible that it took him time to come back from the blister? And is there anything you see different in the last 3 starts? I think the swinging strike's big for me. That was tremendous because that blister issue, we've seen it with like Braxton Garrett and some other guys. It takes a handful of starts, obviously, to get back from that. Have you seen anything when you look at John Gray that leaves you optimistic?
Yeah, over the last 3 starts, a 3.75 ERA, Sierra compared to the 5.71 ERA, including a really strong outing against the Giants, mind you, so keep that in mind, but no offense, Bubba.
No, it's fair.
But some bad BABIP luck. The 333 BABIP isn't exactly good. K-minus walk rate of 19.4%. Good, not great. 1.2 on WHIP, not ideal. Let me see. I'm going to see if maybe the velocity was up. I'm just going to look at his last few games in terms of like, was there a velo? Like, normally I catch the velo changes, so I don't think.
Yeah, even that last start against the Giants, the O swing was through the roof. Swinging strike was up a pretty good amount from the previous start.
So how much does that start carrying the last three?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to like decipher in my brain. Because like Houston, he got a great swinging strike rate against Houston too. That's a tough matchup. Then Miami, they've been a sneaky good of late contact wise. So yeah, Giants kind of helped.
I'm not saying that Gray isn't going to be good rest of the way. It's just one of those things where, so over the last 3 starts, Gray flip-flopped minus the last start, which is funny because the last start's his best start out of the last three. He had been flip-flopping the slider fastball usage, so the slider had been way up, with the fastball being the secondary to that. It's still a slider fastball combo with the changeup and curve being kind of just thrown in there as needed. So Gray isn't really changing it up in terms of slider fastball. What he had done was flip-flop the usage where it's like the slider was up to like 60%, and the fastball was down to 30-35%. And then this last start where he found success, it was a 42-47% split with the fastball getting the most of it. So that was the big change. I say that was the only change I noticed from the last start compared to the first two. But he has been incorporating a heavier slider approach with the slider fastball combo John Gray has. But I don't know if that's enough to really be like, hey, so this is a thing. This maybe it's helping the strikeouts, but I can't speak to if it's going to actually lead to it. Because part of what led to his success was changing the slider initially, getting that slider's velocity up and kind of change. I think it was changing the way he was throwing it in terms of like less movement on it. And the slider's velocity has been up a little bit the last few starts. I don't know about the movement though.
That Giants game, he also saw his ground ball rate soar up in that game. It was all strikeouts and ground balls against the Giants.
Yeah, I'm looking. I'll see. And there was, of course, he had less vertical move. He had a little less movement on the breaking ball. Almost like it was again not moving as much. I don't know. It's hard to say. It seems like it was one good. I mean, I 15s you're holding, 12s still fringy in my opinion. Yeah. But it's just one of those things where it's like, there's not, I'm over here trying to find something for John Gray. Like, oh, this definitely happened. I see some stuff, but not enough to be like, yeah, this is definitely why it's going to be good going forward. Before there was a little bit of change in the slider and all that, throwing it harder or whatever, but he's kind of doing that, but it's one start and then kind of less movement, but it was one start. How much of it was the one start? Was it approach because it was the Giants? Was it because it was the Giants in general? I don't know. I'm not, again, I can't sit here and I'm not going to sit here and make up reasons to be optimistic.
We'll know on Wednesday. He faces the Angels, and that's a struggling team to begin with. And then next week he gets at Arizona. So it's a nice little couple starts here. You'll get a great, you're going to start him regardless. If you have John Gray in both those starts, and you'll know for sure if he's turned the corner or not. If he can't get it done against them, it might be time to pull the pen with a month to go in the season. But yeah, I'd roll him out there against the Angels and the Diamondbacks, to be honest. That's my two cents. So
why not?
That's the way I would approach it. If I was a John Gray manager, that'd be my two cents on that one. All right, Curlin, we're going to wrap it up there. Another episode in the books. Thanks for being here and being a part of it. Any final thoughts before you go to bed for the evening?
I just want to cry.
you're going to get the win, aren't you?
I'm just that, Bubba. I'm just this season. I'm just actually really tired. But the season as a whole, it's like it's a grind. And I think this year was like I stepped up my game in analysis and playing, and it's just becoming like I see how it's like the amount of work it takes to do it all. It's it doesn't matter. We can talk about the off air. Have a good night, everybody. It's been a lot of fun as always.
As always, thanks for Mike Curlin for joining us. Check him out on Twitter @Mike_Curlin. I'm on Twitter @BDentric. Again, keep your questions coming in. We're going to get to the finish line this season, and I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. This was Bench with Bubba, episode 601. Catch you guys next time.
Way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.